My goal as chief of staff, when I was named by President George W. Bush to be his chief of staff, was to be a chief of staff where no one knew his name. And so I wanted to just be kind of inside, making the trains run on time and making sure the president had all he needed to make tough decisions. My anonymity changed on a fateful day that none of us should forget, not because I became known, but because of a tragic incident. And that was when planes crashed into buildings in the United States. We were at a school in Sarasota, Florida, the Emma E. Booker School. It was an elementary school, and the president had arrived at the school, and as we were walking into the class, into the holding room, which was a converted classroom into a White House command center, there was a buzz in the air, and I remember two people in particular kind of asking the question, did anybody hear about a plane crash in New York? One of them was Karl Rove, the other one was Dan Bartlett. And the president, when we arrived at that holding room that was a converted classroom, he got on the phone with Dr. Condoleezza Rice, who was his national security advisor, and I didn't hear that conversation. But as the president was getting ready to go into a classroom filled with very young second graders and talk about mentoring and leaving no child behind in education and the importance of following through on an education for young people so that they wouldn't be left behind, a staffer from the Situation Room came up to the president, the principal of the school, and to me as we stood at the door and said, "Sir, it appears a small twin-engine prop plane crashed into one of the towers at the World Trade Center in New York City." Our collective response was, "Oh, what a horrible accident. The pilot must have had a heart attack or something." And then the principal of the school opened the door to the classroom and the president went into the classroom. When the door shut and I was standing at the door, that same staffer came to me and said, "Sir, it appears it was not a small twin-engine prop plane, it was a commercial jetliner." And my mind flashed to the fear that must have been experienced by the passengers on that plane. They had to know it wasn't gaining altitude, and I don't know why, but that's what my mind flashed to. And then a nanosecond later, that same staffer came to me and said, "Oh my gosh, another plane hit the other tower at the World Trade Center." I knew then, and believe it or not, I thought about Osama bin Laden, UBL, we called him. I knew it wasn't a coincidence. I knew it wasn't an accident. And I thought that it was some kind of an attack. And I knew that I had to tell the president. In fact, I performed a test. Does the president need to know? The answer was obviously yes. I made a decision to pass on two facts and make one editorial comment. I opened the door to the classroom and walked in, and it was unusual for me to enter a room after the president had gone in. I saw the president sitting in front of the second graders. The teacher of the class was sitting beside the president. I saw the press pool in the back of the room. Ann Compton from ABC News looked up at me and kind of mouthed, "What's up?" And I responded back to her, "Two planes." And she looked at me and said, and then there was a break in the conversation at the front of the classroom, and I walked up to the president. I leaned over and whispered into his right ear, "A second plane hit the second tower. America is under attack." I then stood back from the president so that he couldn't ask me a question. And then when the president did not get up, I moved to the door of the classroom and looked around again. And I saw in my peripheral vision the Secretary of Education, Rod Page, and one of the White House staffers, Sandy Kress, who was in charge of education, and the principal of the school. Off to my right, I saw Ari Fleischer whispering into the ear of some of the reporters that were in the press pool. And I opened the door and I left the classroom. The president stayed there, and I was really glad he did. He did nothing to introduce fear to those very young students. He did nothing to demonstrate fear to the media that would have translated it to the satisfaction of the terrorists all around the world. I was also glad that he stayed there because it gave me time to get some work done before the president came back to that holding room. So I was able to tell the staff, get the FBI director on the phone, get a line open to the vice president, get a line open to the Situation Room at the White House. Get the crew back on Air Force One. We weren't planning to take off for several hours later. Get the Secret Service to turn the motorcade around because we're going to have to leave the school. Get some remarks written for the president because we've got 1,000 people in a gymnasium right next door and the president will have to tell them something. And then the president walked into the room. And sure enough, everybody gravitated to the president where he walked into that holding room. And what was the first thing the president said? Get the FBI director on the phone. And we were able to say, he's right here, sir. I'll never forget that day. It was a day that changed America. I don't want anybody else to forget that day. Not because I whispered in the president's ear, but because we lost an awful lot of American citizens that day. We found lots of policemen and firemen that answered the call to duty and ended up sacrificing their lives. So don't forget the sacrifices that day, and don't forget that it changed America.